Welcome to the Dental Business Podcast with your host, an owner of multiple businesses, a mentor, investor, and dental surgeon, Brad Thornton.
Hi, and welcome to the Dental Business Podcast. It has been a while. Now, I wanted to come back with a guest who a lot of you enjoyed the first interview with Grant Macri, where we talked about marketing. Now, he's sold his, he's done five squat practices over a 20-year period, so he's done a heck of a lot and he's got a lot of stories to tell. But he's recently sold another practice, and it's, I think, the second biggest, his second big seven-figure sale that he's done. So, you know, I think hearing his story is very inspiring. A lot of us sort of have got ambitions to buy practice, and many of you guys out there are talking about setting up squats at the moment. Seems to be more and more people are on that kind of training, and listening to somebody that's done it multiple times, had multiple successes in there is just, I think it's just a guy you all want to hear from. So here is Grant Macri, and welcome back to the Dental Business Podcast.
All right, Grant, so thank you for joining us again. This is, I think you might be the first second interview that we've done. And the first discussion and chat we had was to do with marketing, was to do with, you know, your kind of take on how practice can implement certain marketing and this and the other. Since then, you know, something's happened to you quite recently, which I really wanted to get you on to talk about, because I think, you know, your story has become a little even more inspiring since the last time we chatted. So, I mean, would you like to tell everybody kind of what's happened and sort of where things are with you and the practice, and yeah, just kind of fill people in who don't know about what's happened recently?
Sure. I mean, I started doing the Ugly Truth series on my Facebook group. And I just feel that sometimes within dentistry, I just feel that, you know, there's not enough truth about building a practice, developing practices, marketing, advertising. And so I started, it started off as a bit of a joke, but now it's sort of, you know, sort of snowballed into something different. And with my recent sale of my dental practice, which I, it was my Topsham practice I sold, that's the second time I've sold a practice at that level of purchase. So I received quite an extensive fund for the practice, and that's the second time in my career. And I've just added that on, sort of bolted it on to It's an Ugly Truth stuff. So, I, you know, I welcome people to ask me. I'm quite happy to talk about what you can expect from sales, what you can expect from income, which I just want the truth, you know. And it's not about me flexing or me showing off. It's about, I think we all need to know, and it's not all roses to get to that position. And you know, all the anxiety, the stress, the depression that I've experienced during my career to be able to get to achieve that type of success. I just feel as I just want the truth out there, you know, and that's why I started this Ugly Truth series, and that's why, you know, we're speaking today. And my whole branding is changing on my mentorship to it, the Ugly Truth, Rags to Riches, and that's my next chapter, really.
Yeah, because that's one of the things. I mean, you know, you talk about sort of a career, and often a career culminates in a sale. That's it. But you've done it again. Do you feel like this, the second time round was easier than the first time round?
Do you know, I probably would think it would be easier the second time around if I wasn't that little bit older. As you get older, I don't think you can deal with the stress quite the same. But yeah, I think it was. I think, you know, from the point of, you know, me saying to my wife, let's consider selling again, because I want to concentrate on my dental mentor courses, advertising courses. I said, should we sell? It was literally 8 weeks. So the chap came in, gave the offer. I nearly fell over. I did compose myself and say I wanted a little bit more, but he obviously offered me a considerable amount more than I thought it was worth. And I then said yes. He said it could be completed within 8 weeks. I had 1,200 files on my stick, sent them over. They sent back a few more requests, and 8 weeks later it was completed.
And I mean, do you think you'll do it again? Or like you said, you know, your career now, you're moving from, I suppose, practice ownership, because you've built squats, which I know is becoming, or at least it seems, I don't know whether you get this, that actually people are sort of moving more towards this idea of setting up squats. I mean, I certainly am hearing far more dentists talk about setting up squats. I mean, when you talk to dental brokerages, they say that there are so many people on the books looking to buy existing businesses. But it seems like a lot of the conversations are around building squats. Do you feel as though there's a shift and people are looking at that more?
Do you know they are, aren't they? I think that they are. People are looking at squats. I think traditionally people would buy another dental practice because there's an NHS guaranteed income. But I don't know whether people are viewing the NHS guaranteed income as guaranteed income now, and they're thinking, well, I'm buying an awful lot of goodwill here. Is it worth it? Shall I set up my own squat? And I think that we're almost back to the golden era of dentistry, not necessarily clinical dentistry. You know, I remember, you know, as we know, and 10, 15 years ago, clinical dentistry was the golden era. You couldn't do anything wrong. You know, you could sit there and filling failed or root treatment failed. It didn't matter. You just redid it and recharged the patient if it was after a year. So I'm almost feeling that there is a golden, this is the golden time for the financial aspect of dentistry and setting up squat practices. I think that's, you know, I think that will be the way forward for a little while. And the clients that usually contact me though are just looking to set up a squat. They don't know where to start. They don't know where to look, marketing, advertising. So the ones I see are particularly looking for squats, and that part of the business is going great guns. So I suppose, yes, I think there is a shift towards setting up a squat. But I mean, it's not all roses setting one up. I don't believe in one moment that you have to wait 5 years to make a profit. I don't believe any of that. You know, I've never ever experienced that in any of the squats I've built. I've never, you know, 12 months I've made, in the first 12 months I make a profit, and that's what you should be aiming for. And I think a lot of people are still put off a little bit by the squats, by the stuff that's put out on social media, and that's all the ugly truth stuff that I like to talk about. I mean, I probably, most squats I made about 80,000 profit in for 6 to 8 months, so that's what I'd aim for.
And do you reckon that, I mean, I remember we spoke about this before actually, how you, I think you talk about how, you know, if you buy a practice in, or you say buy, you set one up, and then either, you know, you're starting on Monday and you're going, right, I'm starting on Monday, how do I generate my patients? You know, you talk, don't you, about how you really need a reasonable run up so that you almost at the day one when you're open, your appointment book is full. You know, what's your kind of advice regarding that then? You know, I mean, we're talking about squats. You know, how far in advance do you need to be starting to plan your marketing and your strategy and your business so that actually on that day one you're fully running, you know, sort of, hit the ground running, I guess.
That's a really, really, really good question, because I've seen recently that someone's saying there is a formula. There is no formula. You know, you have to look at the area, you have to decide how and in which ways you're going to set up. I mean, I set up one of the largest private practices in Devon, and ended over about 3 to 4 or 5 year period. And I remember I looked at it and I thought, right, there's a lack of NHS dentists. So I thought, well, let's open an NHS dentistry book and close it very quickly and then accept independent patients. So I put out adverts about me opening an NHS practice. I then phoned the local press and I said, you've got to get your TV people down here. You know, it's going to be packed. I didn't know whether it was going to be packed or not. So they said, was it going to be that busy? I said, there's going to be queues everywhere. I've got a couple of friends. This is a long time ago, before the GDC. I've got friends to block the road in the cars, and so it looked busier than what it was. There was then queues, but they weren't actually necessarily coming to see me. But when the press came in, they said, well, you do have queues. I said, yeah, they're all coming to register, and they weren't. There was just a problem on the road. However, when that then went out, more people came down and created a frenzy. But that was many years ago. But my most recent squat, it was a case of people wanting whitening and straightening and Invisalign. So I put adverts out probably about 3 or 4 months before it started. And then the open days weren't necessarily for family members or ungrateful local businessmen. It was for treatments. You know, open days, you're opening the practice, you need to have the patients in the chair. You need to be hitting the ground running, as you say. So yeah, I just made sure I did treatment-specific open days, and yeah, it was packed straight away, the one I've got.
And just on that, actually, on open days, this is a selfish question. So how often do you or, you know, do you think open day should be done? Is it because I mean, I see ads on social media about open days, like most weeks, a different practice within Leeds or within my area is marketing for open days. Should they be part of your overall sort of annual marketing plan? Should they be every quarter, once a year, or how do you sort of see them?
I like being interviewed by you, because that is another bloody good question. I mean, the thing is, if you're seeing open days being advertised in Leeds or wherever you are all the time, then you need to be advertising all the time. I never turn my open day adverts off, ever. You know, I will keep them on. It's an open day all the time. Now, if they see that advert, they will then book in. They'll get a discount on that. I won't advertise that open day in-house. I won't advertise it to present patients. It's just an advert that goes out all the time. So when the patient's in the chair, I'll turn around to my nurse and go, open, which basically means this is an open day discount. If it's not, I carry on the treatment. If it is, it's an open day discount. And that's how I've got a diamond provider in Invisalign, by just, you know, putting out open days all the time. Why stop? You know, utilize it, you know, really, really get to, if everybody's doing it, then do it all the time. Hammer it until it's right. Until it's a dead dog, then you've got to think of something else. But whatever you do, you've got to be very careful. If you're going to do an open day discount all the time, you've got to have the answer to the patient who say, oh, I've just seen your advert. Why am I not on that? Which is easy. All I would say was, look, there was an Invisalign discount on that day. You've missed it. However, what I'll do is I'll throw a couple of 6-bar retainers in and a little bit of bonding and make sure you don't lose out. And they're fine. Happens probably three times a month, if that, twice a month. You know, it doesn't happen regularly. But if you're seeing those adverts out there, you've got to be up there. Don't listen to the marketers that say it cheapens your profession. That's garbage, absolute garbage. You've got to get the patients in the door. What cheapens your profession is doing bad work. It isn't getting those patients through the door. You know, that is the ugly truth of it all.
And it's interesting, actually, because when you start to see it maybe not be as effective, you know, have you been in a situation where you look at the results or you're not getting as many in and say, you know what, we need to maybe change the tact of the open day or change the offer, or how much thought process do you put into changing whatever it is that you change, or is it just an ongoing test, if you like, or is it that successful that, from your experience, actually, because I've noticed this, when our open day stuff goes live, the number of people that respond because it's, you know, the scarcity idea that it's an open day, that it's this, that it's that, it's like, oof, you know, they respond really well to it. And have you noticed that dries up after a certain amount of time then?
No, do you know what? Yes, I suppose scarcity is one thing, one part of an advert, but you probably, that's only about 15% of why people actually book in to see you. So you're right. I think the scarcity side of things, if you've consistently got an open day advert going out, but you can reduce that scarcity or increase that scarcity by targeting the different areas. So you could do, I could do Exeter, then I could do Torquay, then I could do Newton Abbot, then I could do this, then I could do that. And so it doesn't dry up. So mine doesn't dry up, but that's what I would do if I was in a city, if you thought that the scarcity side of things were great. But to be honest, so what? You know, you could say there's only 15, and today there's only 20, and tomorrow there's only 10. It doesn't matter. People cares, you know, nobody cares. I mean, all they will do on your website, you could have a testimonial section and cost section and a homepage. That's it. You don't need anything else. No, I've done it. I've done the research. I've looked at Hotjar. I've seen what people look on your website. Nobody cares. So, you know, if you want to put out an advert all the time that you've got an open day, you'll stay busy, you know. And if you don't, then think of something else. I mean, I've had adverts running for 2 or 3 years and I thought, right, that's not working anymore. I've got to change it.
Yeah, I love the fact that you said that, actually, when you went, nobody cares. Because I think sometimes, you know what, people don't admit that. You know, they don't admit that people just don't care about certain stuff, and it's really easy to get swept up and feel as though you have to do things a certain way. You know, you almost fit in, don't you? And one of the things that you talk about is finding ways for you to stand out, and be unique and do things that the breaking news thing, I think, is a brilliant idea. It really is, because if it's not COVID, it's Brexit. And, you know, if it's not Brexit, it might be something else political or something else going on. And it just creates such an intrigue that people will just pick it up And it's right what you say about the Facebook marketing as well, because whenever, I can't remember who said this before, but I mean, you might have even said this as well, but you know, some of the sort of guys who talk about sales that are non-dental, and they say, right, well, our rule is if, unless a customer specifically says, you know, piss off and leave me alone, we'll keep following up. Check. What are your thoughts on that?
I bloody hate that. I mean, I had a client that I was helping, and we'd done the squat, found the location, but started building. And I said, right, I'm going to test out your journey. So I emailed them. And I probably got 8 or 9 correspondents over the next 2 weeks. And I had to ring up and go, can you stop contacting me? You know, I personally think if you get a response, all you have to do is get their telephone number. And I will just try and email them, ring them from the practice, ring them from the surgery mobile, because mobiles, people will answer quicker than, you know, landlines. And just leave them alone. They're not ready. Don't become a stalker. I call them the marketing stalker. And so you don't keep going at them, because it's almost you create a bad will. Mm. You know, yes, you may hook a few that have been lazy, but you may have hooked them anyway. So, I've probably said it's my pet hate. It's like the term bad lead or poor lead. That's another pet hate. You know, there's marketers I know in this dental world that are teaching the younger dentists the term bad lead. And it really, that boils my blood. Really does.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, when you've been sort of seeing patients for long enough, you start to understand, especially if you've, you know, been around for long enough. Like I've been at this practice now, I've had it nearly 11 years now. I've actually had it quite a while. And it's amazing how it can take someone 3 years or 2 years or four, you know, take you actually quite a while for them to sort of mention something again that you've mentioned years ago. Yeah. And it's the same as, you know, when you're asking patients, it was from your conversation actually about when you said, you know, if you're on the desk and you say to a patient, oh, where did you hear about me? And they say, Google, I'll get into a bit more of a conversation and you find out actually that some patients, they may have heard of you or seen something of yours so long ago, but then a recent thing reminded them. So yeah, I think the term bad lead is just, I think it's short-sighted really, because...
It's bloody rude as well. I don't think you should be able to, you know, I mean, I saw the other day on, it was someone who was commenting on a bad lead comment. And I felt like, when did you last go and buy a car and make the first deposit the first time you... Patients don't fly through the window with their mouths open and their wallet out, you know. I mean, Christ, I do say, I don't mean to be derogatory by saying we only do teeth. I don't mean that we haven't done an enormous amount of education and commitment, and you know, that passing my dentistry was probably one of the most proudest things I've done in my life. But we only do teeth. We're not heart surgeons. We're not brain surgeons. We're not saving lives. I'm just moving teeth to make them look pretty. What right have I got to talk about someone and say they're a bad lead? You know, great, I love it. Everybody keep talking about bad leads and keep kicking them out. So I tell you what, they're the ones I'm sweeping up, and that is why I'm a diamond provider. You know, and that's how I've managed to build my businesses over time, because I hook into those bad leads. Some of my colleagues in my area call it, and it's great. Keep doing it, loving it.
And I'll switch slightly. How do you feel that sort of Invisalign has been? Because I mean, you did your IAS, so your ortho sort of repertoire goes beyond just Invisalign. But you know, how much do you think that has played a part in your kind of ability to build successful businesses? Because you know, aligning yourself to a big brand like Invisalign, how do you think that's impacted?
Well, it's certainly increased, isn't it? During the lockdown, I think people have been, you know, furlough money is free, so there's no value, so people will be spending it. You know, there's no holidays, there's no going out to dinner, there's no going shopping. So they have money to spend. So yeah, I have aligned myself as probably the local Invisalign dentist. I'm a diamond provider, as you said, and you know, but there is that fear that there is that number one in the business. You know, if you've got the number one, or if you've got one thing that you hang your whole business on, there is a risk, you know. But Invisalign could go, right, everybody, we're setting up our own Invisalign clinics, putting our own dentists in there, and that's, you know, that's a lot of businesses that will get crushed. You know, I know someone who's about to set up an enormous Invisalign business. That's an enormous risk. You know, I think if Invisalign did that, I'd be able to survive. I'd do something different. I'd go somewhere differently. Sorry, my thing keeps buzzing away there, Brad. How do I stop that?
I don't know. I can't hear anything this end.
Oh, can you not? If I turn Facebook off there, that might stop it. I think Invisalign has changed a lot of people's practices. But I think if Invisalign come along and set their own practices up, put their own dentists in, I think a lot of practices would struggle, and probably that frightens me a little bit. But like I said, there's people who are setting up enormous Invisalign practices, and it is just one, isn't it? That's what they've got. They are concentrating on one part in their business. And I think, you know, when you're not in control, complete control of your business, i.e. someone else is in control of it, like Invisalign is, I think it's a scary, I think there's going to be some scary times, you know? I think that things are changing. If I owned Invisalign, that's what I would do, you know? I'd put my own dentist in an Invisalign store.
I was going to say, do you think that that's something that could be on their agenda? Do you think that's, you know, it's interesting because my friend's got a couple of stores where, and he's got Rolex contracts, so he's however many there are in the UK, he can sell Rolex. He's got the, and actually Rolex have started to roll out some Rolex stores, and they can literally just take a contract off a jeweler. They can, and then they can no longer sell Rolex anymore, or at least not secondhand ones anyway. They can't sell new ones. There's a part of me that wonders whether, you know, with a dental practice, with the legislation, with all of the stuff, do you think Invisalign can be bothered with that, or actually do you think they're so massive that it'd be such an easy thing for them?
Do you know what? And that's an interesting terminology. Can they be bothered? Because they will be bothered if they could make money out of it. Yeah, that's it. End off. If they could look at, say, somewhere in Southampton, wherever, and they will look at how many dentists are doing Invisalign. Now, if they can then do the maths and go, right, we can pack through Invisalign at half the price and pay a dentist hourly rate, of course I would do it. That's the first thing I would do. You know, and it could happen. You know, will it happen? I don't know, because what they've got, they do spend billions on advertising, or millions of billions, or whatever the figure is, but they also rely on us to advertise. So it's a clever business model, isn't it? They've got us, we pay them, and we also market their product. So that would upset that model massive, and it would be a brave chief executive officer of Invisalign to actually go, I'm going to do that. You know, it would be a very brave man or woman. Whether they do, I don't know. Certainly, I'm sure it's something they've looked into.
So you've spoke about clients quite a bit, and you say you've got people that are setting up squats, and you know, do you sort of find, you mentioned that there isn't a formula, but you know, when somebody comes on board that says, right, I'm looking to buy a practice or set up a practice, are there any kind of fundamental things that you feel people need to kind of deal with, or you know, like plan, or certain mindsets? Can you tell? I'm changing the question as I'm saying it. You know, if I was to come to you and say, right, Grant, I'm actually interested in buying a practice or setting one up, you know, could you, after how a certain amount of conversation, say to me, Brad, now's not the time, or you know, you're not ready, or is there anything that people need to think about before they then think about setting a practice up?
That's brilliant. Yes. I don't necessarily think it's, I would never say it's not the right time, because you know, when is the right time? I've done it in the middle of recessions. I've increased my present practice turnover from I think it was like 400,000 or 500,000 to I think it was just shy of 2 million within 6 months during the pandemic. You know, so there's never a right time. End of. You know, or there isn't. Now, the only time I would say to a dentist, you've got to rethink your plan, is usually location. That's the one thing. And I can tell within 10 minutes of Google Earth chatting to the dentist, because do you know what? I can tell in 3 seconds of a conversation, because the dentist will start and go, "I have found a cracking building, amazing," but, and they've got this "but" added on, and to the end, they'll go, "Well, yeah, it's not right then." You know, don't have a "but." It's got to be, "I have found a cracking location, but but the building's a bit crap." And then I'll say, "Well, let's try and work with the building." Because you can't, you know, you can make a beautiful building, you can make a crappy building beautiful for the right location, but you can't do it the other way around. So they always start with, "I've got a brilliant location, but," which is great. If they've got, "I found a great building, but," then it's like, don't bother, move on. And you know, you've just got to, and they say location, location, location. It is location, location, location. I totally agree with that. You know, you've got to have powerful style, you've got to stand out. You know, and if you don't, you'll be spending another 50 grand a year on marketing. Save the marketing costs, you know. And the other thing, of course, when you bring up, there you go, "I want to call my practice," I don't know, some obscure name. Now, I call my practice the White House, which I never call again. Now, but I started that branding way, way back before social media. You know, I would call it, you know, just a basic dental practice and geography, or, you know, the geographical location, or you know, whatever you want to call it. But what I wouldn't, you know, save yourself some money on SEO, you know. I mean, there was a practice down here, the Extra Dental Centre, which is a really clever name, because, you know, they hardly have to spend anything on SEO. Or it just helps with the SEO. So make it easy for yourself. You don't have to have a fancy name, but then again, you've got all that lovely, warm, fuzzy feeling when you start a practice. You want to have lovely branding, you want to have a lovely name, you know, and that's the problem. That sometimes I'm sort of, and it's not a battle, but I give the advice to dentists, they either take it or they don't, which is great. You know, I don't know everything. So, yeah, no, I go through all of that on, when I do my course. I'll just, you know, this is what I can advise you. If you take that advice, great. If you don't, great too. You know, you've got to fly as well. It's just to give them a sort of a bit of a grounding, a bit of a start for them to then develop themselves.
And do you think it's, you know, how important is local competition? You know, do you sort of look to see where other dentists are geographically, or more how their marketing is in terms of sort of their online presence? So if, you know, if you're in an area that might have what appears to be a reasonably concentrated number of dental practices, but then when you look online, you notice that actually these other dental practices don't have much online presence. Do you think in a world of social media and the internet, sort of geographical location in terms of competition matters as much as the online presence does?
Do you know what? I think probably a bit of both. Whenever I set up a practice, I would go to local coffee shops. I would phone the practices. I would phone them and see how quickly they could get me in for Zoom whitening, see how busy they are. The local coffee shops usually can tell you how good they are and they're considered in the area. I'd go to the local estate agents. They're also pretty clued up on how good or bad the local practices are. I almost look for reputation rather than anything else, because you can have a flashy website no matter what. I basically would prefer to just aim straight at the at their reputation in the area, which is what I always did and which is what I always do. You obviously would look, so my first point of call would be looking on the website. I'd then put their websites into some of the free platforms or softwares to find out about how good they are. So you can use Neil Patel, you can use Spyto. There's a lot of things that you can use. So I then see how good the website is. I then go on to what their reputation's like, and that would be, you know, that would be physically getting onto the pavement and finding out how good their reputation is. And then I would move on then to go, right, that price is for taking. You know, look at their price list. I'd probably undercut them. I don't care what other marketers say. I'd certainly undercut them to start with, just to get their patients. And I'd even set up next door. I'm not precious with stuff like that. So yeah, I suppose I do look at competition, but why are we all fishing in the same pond, which is what I put out on the group recently? We need to get up and fish in a different pond. Stop looking for Invisalign and dental implants, and, you know, maybe go back to basics and start putting blogs out about wobbly teeth or bad breath, because these are the things people are looking for well before they even realize implants and teeth straightening are even a treatment, you know? So, you know, I just think we should got to get into a different pond. You know, yes, we all go for different treatments, but it's just a different area of the pond. You know, you've got to move away. If you're not the best, you've got to move away and be the best in your own pond, you know?
Yeah, that's good, because I think, you know, it's things like Invisalign and Clear Align stuff. It's really fashionable at the moment.
Yeah.
And maybe these messages that have been swamped and not even given anymore, you know, the message of, I think bad breath's a really big one. I think when you do analysis of searches, people actually search about bad breath and things quite a lot, don't they? And
Gaps between the teeth, bad breath, short teeth, small teeth, wide teeth, there's loads, chipped teeth. There's loads of things people are searching for that dentists are not going, right, let's start attacking that, you know? And blogging is so easy. It's so easy, and it's so easy to optimize it yourself. It isn't rocket science. It really isn't. It's so basic. I can optimize a blog in about 3 minutes now.
Yeah. And in terms of that now then, you know, because how much stuff do you, like in terms of a blog, you know, you're now in a position where you've kind of sold the practice. I know that you're still going to be involved with the sort of the marketing and making sure that, you know, things are done a certain way. How hands-on are you with regards to sort of your kind of clinical dentistry versus time you spend doing the marketing and writing things? And or are you the delegator now that you've kind of got to that level? Because I know with me and my practice, it's quite hard for me to let go of certain things. Do you feel that if you want a business to grow, because yours have grown quickly, and you know, you know, do you need to let go? Is that something that you, is that a skill that you've learned, or is it born?
I used to do it all myself, but now I've sort of passed it over to particular people. So I've got someone doing my Google ads, I've got someone doing my Facebook, you know, I've got someone put a bot on my site, you know, so I've drawn back from doing a lot of the marketing stuff. I don't blog so much anymore, so I don't need to. No, do you know why? Because no one's competed with me. If you Google, you know, like Invisalign Exeter, I've got like 7 points. I've got 7 places on page one. Seven. That's not just one. I've got 7 from the ads, from 2 Google My Business, which I should really only have 1, but I have 2 Google My Business. I'm at number 1. I've got Facebook. I've got my 2 landing pages. That's just page one, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't need to do much now because I've got that amount of dominance in my area. However, it will come a time when someone else comes along and goes, right, Grant, you know, we've got to take him down. And I'll go, right, now it's time to crank it up again. And I will. If anybody tries to take over my area, I will crank it up. Now, I don't care who you are. You know, that I've worked hard to get there. And I know that there's people that are trying to chip away. And then I just immediately go in and do whatever they're doing. And I'll just sort of torpedo it. So yeah, absolutely. You know, but now your question was, I don't need to do so much for now, but I have got people helping me to keep me at that position. Whether I have to develop it further, well, that's another story, and I don't have to develop it yet.
So I know we spoke about this, I think either in one of the clubhouse rooms, possibly, I think it was, where I think I asked you when you start, because you have a philosophy which is similar to mine, where, you know, if you're going to buy a practice, you know, is it that you always say be ready for an exit, or have the exit in mind, or, you know, kind of think like that? Or did you start this and say, right, well, this is what I did last time, these are my experiences, I need to run this a certain way so that if I want to sell it, it's ready to be sold?
That's funny. Again, brilliant question. I just fly by the seat of my pants. You know, I just go, right, 4 years' time, I'm going to change again. And, you know, 4 years after that, I'll change again. I just change my colours every 4 years. But when I decided to sell the business, I thought, right, I do need to now, you know, do things differently. Because to be honest with you, the difference between profit-wise, you know, earning, or when you're up at with 4 or 5 clinics, is probably similar to 2 clinics, 3 clinics. So I didn't increase just because of the profit. I increased because I want to sell. I want to put the gross on the top, probably increase my profit or EBITDA. So, you know, it was a case of, oh, I'm going to sell now. And so I'm going to start packing surgeries in. I was designing, putting them in, and 6 months later, then I sold. So it was a case of, right, I've got to start doing that now. So, you know, you can be just as profitable on a 2 surgery practice or 3. So I think 3 is the magic number. 3 is the magic number. You know, someone phones up and says, well, you know, Grant, what shall I do? Shall I do a surgery with 2, or shall I do 1 with 4? It's got to be 3. I've never done a squat practice with less than 3, because you can always expand. You can't, or you can always shrink, or you have spare rooms, but you can't do with 2 surgeries. You need to think, oh, I wish I'd got another one. because it's you know, and the expense of changing it would, or developing it would be, you know, it just wouldn't be worth it financially. So yeah, absolutely. I don't have a plan, an exit strategy in mind. It was just that, right, I'm going to probably sell it now. Let's do something. And you know, I wish I had that brain where I could plan. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do in 4 years' time. I know I enjoy teaching. I love that, and that more passionate than actually dentistry, to be fair.
Yeah, and in terms of the course, then, and I say course because. What are the different sort of levels that you've got? So I know there are courses that you do and there's a mentorship. Do you want to just kind of, and obviously I know you don't like the sales pitch and that's not what this is, but I think it'd be quite interesting to know what you do in terms of the courses that you do and also the mentorship that you've got there.
Well, I've got, when I go in Clubhouse and they've got lengthy introductions, it kills me. I just, you know, just click on my photo. You don't want to know about me, fine, just if you do, click on my face. But yeah, I started doing one-to-ones, so basically I do one-to-ones on Facebook ads, how to do it yourself. I've got one-to-ones on blogging and SEO. I've got a one-to-one on finding a practice, squat build. I'll do a survey with them, I'll do full support, and they're fully booked. I've got waiting lists to go on them, so I can't take anyone on just now for doing that. And I've got the Consilium Dentium, and that was something I built in lockdown, and it's basically a 6-month program that I'll only take on a couple, you know, three clients at a time, and so I've got my three clients there as well, so that's great. And my first program, my first 6-monthly, is now coming to an end, so you know, I like to keep my numbers small so I can then give quality help. And then also I've just started my course as well. So I started my course in May, and that just basically does the lot. I mean, it is a hell of a heavy course, and the May, June, July are fully booked, which is brilliant. And I've just opened an August one in London. And that basically, it just covers everything from, I'll show you how to SEO blogs, I'll show you about reception skills, and, you know, marketing, my top 40 marketing advertising tips and tricks, free softwares. I mean, it just covers everything. But it's a hell of a day. So next Saturday, I've got one in Bristol. Again, it's fully booked, which is brilliant. And I'm trying it in a day. So I don't know how it's going to go, because it is a 2-day program. But I'm trying it in a day, so I've made it a little bit more affordable. So I'm going to try it in a day. But I think that everyone's going to be a little bit knackered. So it'll be interesting. And then if everyone's just too tired, it'll go back to 2 days again. But that'll be, you know, it's not just for dentists, though. A lot of dentists I've found are going, look, Grant, I want absolutely nothing to do with marketing and advertising. I want to bring it in-house. I want to know how to put an advert out. I want to know how to do a paid advert. I want to understand these absolute ridiculous reports some marketers send dentists that mean absolutely nothing. I want to be able to understand that, but I don't want to do it myself, which is fine. So people are sending their TCOs, their managers, and they're all welcome. The only people who aren't welcome are marketers. I'm not opening up. Why should I, you know, why should I show them dental marketing for them to go and teach other dentists? So it's only open to the dentists and their team members.
And are you finding, are people that are coming or inquiring, are they those who have got, you know, an existing practice or work within an existing practice? Or do you have some people who, you know, would it be suitable for, say I'm an associate and I'm like, right, this is what I'm planning to do. Or would you recommend the one-to-one thing more, or do you feel as though, you know, would somebody benefit from learning this pre-purchase?
This Saturday, or next Saturday, sorry, I have an associate who is going to be buying. So yeah. You know, I've had associates who are just associates, and then I've got associates who are about to buy. You know, principals and also principals, TCOs, managers. It's really, it's for everyone really who wants to know that a little bit more, how to get patients through the door, what to expect, what reports you can ask from your nurse, how you can sell to clients, you know, just simple stuff about selling techniques. It doesn't have to be complicated, you know. I've got really simple selling techniques, and hence why, you know, the stuff I teach, I show work, because I've sold 2 practices for millions. I've also, you know, I've become a diamond provider. So the things I teach work. And so, you know, it can be for anybody. It can be from anything, from associates. Like I said, I've got a couple of associates who are on next week who are thinking of buying. So I'm actually doing a one-to-one with them first about what to look for, how to buy, and then that gets them going. They'll bring a few properties to the table. I'll do a Zoom. We'll have a look at the property. Google Earth is brilliant to be able to go down the streets and have a look at and see whether it's a good property. And then they're coming on the course and sort of cements everything. It almost gives them that little bit of a push, you know, go, right, I'm ready. I'm off. Let's do it. Let's buy it.
So I'm going to make a guess here, Grant. So I reckon that this is something that you do not do. That there is, I think it might be an NLP technique where when you shake someone's hand, if you rotate it and their hand rotates with you, they're susceptible to being sold to. Whereas if you rotate it and they're resistant, and if they're resistant, that means that actually they probably aren't very susceptible. So if a patient walks into your surgery and you go to shake the hand, obviously COVID, whatever, and if you just go boop and their hand goes like that and moves with yours, it apparently means they're susceptible to be sold to.
You did a Mason handshake and then they'd be susceptible to you as well. I didn't know that. That's a brilliant bit of info.
Yeah. You know what? When I first heard that, actually, it was I can't remember where I heard it from, but it was from actually quite a respectable source, and it was delivered in a non-twattish way. So I thought, all right, you know what? I might give that a go. And actually, it seemed to kind of work, but it was one of those where I think, do you know when someone says, right, you've got to give eye contact, but for not too, when you start to think too much, I think you need to be either totally natural and you don't know this, or good at it that it becomes really natural. And I think, you know, there's a risk that you're shaking someone's hand and you're like, you know, and you're kind of, you know, doing this sort of arm wrestling with
patience. It's so funny. How far do you go? You know, I have never done this. May I add to your listeners, I've never done this, but you can have little props. So you can have a lady's handbag in the room, and while the patient's in the chair. And also, you can have a wonky shelf. So the you get your nurse to say to you, that's the previous patient's handbag. And then you say, oh, that's fine. The patient trusts me. They'll be coming back a bit later on. And immediately, the patient in the chair thinks, well, other patients trust this dentist. And the wonky shelf, you can say, look, you say to your nurse, I want the builder to come back. That's wonky, that shelf is. I want it absolutely perfect. And they go, this person, they strive for perfection. There's all these, and I read a book like this, with all these little things, and it was fascinating because it would work, but it's unethical to be able to sell in those using little props. But I've never done that, may I add.
And I think as well, like, there's a risk that the same patient comes back and you've, it's like, is that the handbag still there?
and the shelf's still wonky.
Mate, you're just going to say, you need to get on top of your builder, bloody hell.
Exactly.
So now you've sold the practice. You know, you've been an associate what for now a week or so. How are you finding sort of life on the other side? Because you know, between the first sale and the second squat that you start, I say second. I'm talking. I mean, I know you've done a lot more stuff, but what's the kind of, you know, have you been an associate for very long before, or is this kind of like, does it feel like it's new pastures?
It is. I was an associate for 6 months before I bought my foot as a VT. They called it VT. I think it went to VDP after that, but it was VT. 6 months, I bought my first 5-bedroom house, started filling it with dentists, and I did another 5-bedroom house, filled it with dentists, you know. And so this is the first time I've been an associate. You know, I'm going to be a super associate. Yeah, I think that's what we call them now. So yeah, no, do you know, it's just a different, it's a different part of my life. It's just a different era, you know. So I've only been an associate for a week. So yeah, out of the whole of my career, I sold to a big squat practice. I sold it to IDH, and I handed my notice in same day. It completed, and my notice in, and unfortunately, that's why they tied dentists in for 5 years now, because of me. Sorry, everyone, but I'm tied in. I'm a victim of my own success. I'm tied in, so.
And I think as well, actually, you know, people talk about sort of selling to corporates, and there used to be, I know when I first bought practice, there was a real kind of anti-corporate sentiment, and dentists were like, don't want to sell to a corporate, don't want to do this. But I think times are changing. I think, you know, nowadays, you know, with the valuations that are out there, you know, if you do create a successful practice, because I'm assuming, did yours go on the market or was it literally? Did it just, you know, was it, how did the sale happen? Did you pick up the phone to an existing contact then?
I just picked the phone up, you know. Said, you know, you're interested, come down, have a look and see what you think. And I just contacted a couple of people and said, are you interested? You know, and yes, you use brokers, they're great, and the accent's brilliant. You know, I used the Cravley Partners before when I've sold one. They're all brilliant, but this time I thought, well, I'll do it myself. Rang up and said to them, you know, do you want to come down and have a look and tell me what you think? And when I remember when I first had the sales guy in or the acquisitions guy in, I sat him in my room. I said, look, I'm young enough not to sell. I said, I don't want to mess around here. I said, don't come out with a price because you think, well, let's just mess around and let's see if it's low and see how he comes back. I said, you've got to sit there, not waste my time. I'm not going to waste your time. You just give me the best offer on the table or else we're wasting both times. And then just, we may as well, you know, have a coffee together, have a laugh, and then, you know, you can leave. And he did. He gave me his best offer, which was great.
And I mean, what's your opinion actually on that with regards to, and like you said, I mean, there are very respectable companies out there and it's got nothing to do with them. It's more the market. But do you think dental practices are valued quite high? I mean, if you were to look at another industry, some of the valuations that I see for what the underlying business does, especially when they've got NHS contracts. I mean, the argument is, oh, well, it's an NHS contract. It's, you know, it's guaranteed or whatever. But if the practice is only doing 50 grand profit, but it's being sold for 600, 500 grand, you know, the numbers don't seem to make sense. Do you feel as though things are valued too highly?
You know, sometimes I think they're valued too low and sometimes I think they're valued too high. There doesn't seem to be much a uniform approach to purchasing practices. I don't know. It's a funny thing. Sometimes you get a practice that's doing really, really well and they haven't, you know, they go, right, because you're down in Cornwall, we're not going to pay for much. But if they're profiting down there, then it's the same as, you know, I prefer to buy a practice that's profiting in Cornwall more than one that's in London. Yeah. So, you know, it's an oddity. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. You know, with my sales, they've always been quite good. But, what was so, so important, when the people came down to buy my practice or to value the practice, they knew so much about me. It was unbelievable. They knew how many Google reviews I had. You know, that's so important. Patients look at it, but so do prospective, you know, people who are thinking about buying your practice. Get your testimonials up, you know. If you've got 3.1 and they all think you're crap, they know that you've got a bad business before they even come to the door. So you've got to get those reviews up for online. You've got to have an online presence. You've got to, you know, and so when you've got that, it all adds value to a practice. It's not just the bottom line or the figures that come to the door. Because they knew everything. They knew all about me. They knew about my mentorship. And I thought, these are the people I want to be associated with because that's what I would do, you know.
That's a really good point, actually, because social proof, it's not patient, so, you know, no, social proof is
absolutely
creating an impression, isn't it? That's
I didn't realize that, Brad. I didn't realize that they would go through everything. Yeah. But, you know, when you're talking millions, they're going to go through everything. And so, you know, you were talking about corporates, whether you should sell to corporates. My practice got to a size that it had to be a corporate or it had to be a partnership. You know, you'd either bring on a partner who had deep pockets or it had to be a corporate. Yeah. And I wasn't ready to retire. And so it was a case of, I think, the corporate. And I did look into all the corporates. I looked at all their reviews. I looked at their websites. I phoned their practices to see if they were any good, if they could answer the telephone. I did all that as well. So they didn't just do that on me. I did it. I made sure I investigated them. And I told them. I sent the corporate the results of my mystery shoppers that I did on their local practices. And I said, look, you know, I wanted to come on board. I'd love to be part of them. And it's just I find it really exciting, this corporate model, as long as it's done right. And it's quite exciting, really. If it's done wrong, and it's just about the bottom line, or it's just about the numbers, then it frightens me a little bit because we are still a caring profession, you know, and we still have to maintain standards, you know?
Yeah, well, I think you know, I personally have my own opinion about corporates, you know, and I've got very good opinions about some, like Portman. You know, I have spoke to people from Portman before, and I do respect them. And
did you know I'd sold to Portman? Because no one's asked me.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's Portman, isn't it, that you've sold?
But no one's asked me, and I'm always very wary because they're, you know, and it's so lovely because they do go on like it. That it's a family, and it is. And I've just got to be very wary that when I say it's Portman, I want to respect them to be able to review anything I come out with before. You know, I say it's Portman, but it is Portman. I've said nothing that's derogatory. Well, I couldn't. Because, you know, they've been really supportive. And the minute you complete with them, you get emails, you get... I'm a little bit lost by how many people are in their organisation, because literally, I just know what, it's a spider's web of an organisation. You think, yes, there's 150 practices, but, you know, there's so many different people, but they're welcoming and they help you through it. And, you know, it's quite an emotional roller coaster. To sell, because, you know, you've got to still drive, you know, be steering the ship or driving, whatever the expression I'm using, but you are then you have to be within constraints of an organization, which dentists don't like to be, you know. And you're saying that about dentists and corporates, but it's because that I think as dentists, we think we are in charge, we are always right, we are clinically, you know, and I think it's an attitude within our profession, and I have that attitude, or had that attitude, that, you know, my way is law, and we're not good at being told any different, and that's quite respectful too. But I think that's the difference. If suddenly you bring a corporate on board, and there it's like their word is law. It's not like having a partner who's like you. It's having a completely different mindset that these businesses do know how to run businesses, or they wouldn't have 150 practices, or they wouldn't have. You know, I can run my business. You know, I can run my business well. I don't think I could run 150 practices. I could certainly run 150 practices showing them how to market marketing and advertising, but I couldn't do the financial side of running a business and making sure everyone stays happy, and, you know, and you can sit there and go, yeah, you've heard Portman are really good. And that's a testament to how well they get it right, and how well others get it so wrong. And I'm not saying names there.
Yeah. And just out of interest, really, in terms of their sort of transition when they've come in, you know, are they looking to change much, or is it really a lot of the back end, like you said, HR, finance, sort of the stuff that as an organization can be sort of centralized? Because things like marketing, it's very unique, isn't it, I guess, to the practice, that personality of the dentist there, the practice there, the local demo, you know. So are they centralizing certain parts of the business, but maintain autonomy with certain other parts?
Well, and it's always I always like to talk about the ugly truth. And yes, I think with regard to Portman and all the corporates, they will say that they don't want to change anything, but they have to change it because it's a corporate. You know, they have to change, and you have to come into line with their ethos. I mean, you know, or there's, you know, there's. That's how you grow. You grow together. So, do they want to change anything? No, I mean, not radically. I mean, they're allowing me to do the marketing, which is brilliant. Apparently, I'm the only person in the UK that is totally in charge of the marketing. You know, which is the bit that I love. They realised I was good at it, which is great. I've even got a Portman coming to my course next week to see how good it is. That's how much they want to be part of. Yeah, so I'm a bit nervous about that, my head. So, you know, that's how much they want to develop, and they're quite happy to go, right, Grant, there's a stage, you show us you're any good, and then we'll use it. If not, get off. And that's fine with me, you know. So it's not cutthroat. It's just, you've got the opportunity, like any business, Brad, you've got the opportunity, you show you can do it, great, they'll use it. If not, get off, we'll look at someone else. And that's fine with me, you know. So do they want to change it? Not massively, but you do have to come into line with certain things, and whether I agree with those changes or not, you still have to come into line. You know, I sold it for a reason. You know, I've got that bank balance now that I didn't have, and I've got to go, right, I've got that bank balance because I've got to do certain things to toe the line. And it's that toeing the line I sort of struggled with, or have struggled with, and then I've been fine about. But then, do you know what? I get a call from one of the Portman team, and they go, Grant, do you want to talk about it? One of them was so sweet. They said, look, my dad has sold. I know exactly how you feel. You know, do you want to talk it through? And then I'm fine. you know, because they're listening. And, you know, so to be honest with you, I thought it was going to be a living hell. But, you know, the first week, it's brilliant. You know, I mean, the first week is apparently the worst. I think after 2 or 3 weeks, I'll just flow into it, you know, and it doesn't worry me, you know.
And, you know, if you were, I'm assuming that you like you said, you know, you won't do another squat because you've mentioned your age, but I'm sure, you know, but, you know, say you were of an age or at least mindset that maybe another squat could be on the cards. Do you think that it's harder nowadays than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago? Do you think the market's more difficult, the patients are more difficult, you know, do you think it is more difficult?
Do you know what, if it's easy and it's hard, it's both, you know, it's not necessarily easier, there are easier parts of it, but I no word of a lie, I know a town, it's not far from me, I know for a fact I could set up there and it would be an absolute blinding success within 6 months. And no one's done it, you know. I've even told a couple of clients, just have a look at this town. Just have a look and see what you think. And it'd be a blinding success. So so I think that it's easy and it's difficult. It's just different, I think. It's just different. But, you know, I know that there is this town near me that would be goldmine. But people haven't set up there. And then people do, you know, after I do these talks, they go, well, where is this town? But it's gold dust. You know, there's just poor advertising. You know, the support isn't great. The dental practices don't push anything out. Thank God, there's like 200,000 people. I'm like, oh my God, I'd love to do it. So, you know, and I just know the people who would support me doing that with regard to paid ads, Google, Facebook. And so I'd find it a piece of cake, to be honest. I would absolutely find it a piece of cake. But, you know, I don't know if I've got it in me to do another one. And you know, I'm enjoying doing what I'm doing just now, you know. So, but I, you know, so I don't think it's on the cards. I've done it, you know. I've done that. I've bought one practice that was an actual practice, and I've done the five squats. I did a property squat to pay myself through dentistry. So it's almost I've got to a point where I think, well, I've done that. Now I want to do something else. Now I want to build my mentor business. And I think that's the one that I want to. And if someone said to me, like, Grant, would you invest and show me how to do it? Great. I'd write a book about it. You know, I'd do that. I'd help someone actually. I'd hold the hand through the whole process and go, right, there you go. Off you go. You do yourself. I'd do that. Definitely. That'd be a bit of fun.
Did you just say write a book as well?
Yeah, I've considered writing a book about how to set up a practice from sort of, you know, from rags to riches. Definitely. You know, I'm thinking about it. I haven't got time just now. As I said, I'm doing the courses, but after that, you know, I might consider doing, you know, actually support someone through the whole process and write a book during.
So do you think that, do you know the course that you're doing in Bristol that's a full day, does that course pretty much cover what would be in the book?
No, I mean, you know, the funny thing is, part of the book would be about the ugly truth, you know, about the experiences in my life as well. What led me up to dentistry and how my thought processes as well. So there'll be a lot more personal stuff in the book. But when you're writing a book, you know, you do a course, don't you? And you go, right, there you go. That's all my knowledge. And hopefully I've given most of that knowledge in the course. So you can go away and go, I can do all that. And, you know, the people have been on it. I'm so humbled because I've had such raving reviews of the people who've been on the course. But yeah, I think when you write a book, it goes deeper, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, you get that more soul part of you comes out. And so, you know, yes, I can show you how to write an advert. Easy. I can show you how to target the dentist on Facebook. Easy. But then when you're writing a book, I suppose, you know, it's more soulful. You start thinking about how that knowledge came, how you developed that knowledge and built that knowledge and the experiences in your life that brought you to that. And I suppose that would be the difference with the book. It'd be a little bit deeper than just, this is how to do it. Off you go. Yeah. You know, go and look at your unique selling point and stuff.
Because I think actually, you know what, if you were to record your, because you're so kind of open with everything, and actually I reckon quite a few stories would crop up. If you recorded the whole thing and then transcribed it using like a transcription service, you'd have like tens of thousands of words just sat there waiting for you. I've done it myself. I've got half a dozen books from, I've done like videos for patients, have done certain videos for various bits and pieces, and I've got transcribed audio just sat there. I've got about 70,000 words that
wow,
and I'm like, you know what, if you go through that and convert it from me speaking into something that's a bit more readable, actually you could probably take out bits and tidy everything up. I think that might be a way for you to start to put a book down on paper.
That's a really good idea. Do you know what? I didn't even know you could do that. So you just talk into something, record it, and then you just wing it off to someone and go...
Yeah, but I mean, rev.com, R-E-V.com. If you've got, it's like, say this podcast, if I got this audio and I sent it to Rev within 24 hours or so, we'd have a transcribed version of the whole conversation.
I didn't know that. Wow. Gosh. Yeah. No, I didn't know that. That'd be so much easier.
Yeah. So if you just, if you record the, because if your courses, you're talking about what's on the content, but you'll divert from the content to talk about personal stuff within that.
Yeah.
And you just had it all transcribed. Mm. You've got the whole body of text just ready for you to change rather than just, you know.
Didn't know that. I mean, you know, the problem is, you know, when I do these ugly truth videos though, and it's not, I know it's a lot of it is quite jokey, but it's not. And I have to be, you know, I've got one coming. And it's building just now, and it's my experience of childbirth. Now, you know, I have to be ready. I've got it all. I've got it all down ready, but I have to be ready, and I get this inspired feeling. Then I have to put it out, and that's when I do it. So it's all timing. So, you know, for me, if I was going to write a book or I was going to do something, it has to be, you know, I get the writer's block thing. I mean, I'm hopeless. My grammar, my spelling is bloody atrocious. But, you know, I just type away and off it goes. And it comes out in the head, and it's, and like these videos, it just comes out in the head because I'm feeling it. And then when it's done, it's done. So that's what worries me about writing a book. I'll have to do it only when I have this feeling, or it won't be good. You know, I can't do it unless I get this feeling. Because I've tried before doing a post. So sometimes I won't post for weeks because it just doesn't come. And then suddenly, you know, it'll come in the morning and I'll go, right, let's get it out. So my next ugly truth video is about my child birthing experience with my wife. So there's some very, 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 very funny bits there.
And yeah, so those ugly truths, they come out in your Facebook group. I mean, I think a lot of people that are going to listen to this will know about the group. But do you want to just say where people can find the group? Because, you know, as much as this stuff out there, I do think that the way that your group's set up on Facebook with, even when the marketers come in and try and overtly market and then get shot down, it's done in such a good way. I think it's really unique. But can you just remind people what the Facebook group is again, just in case anyone hasn't found it yet?
It's the marketing group. I changed it because it used to be advertising marketing tips and tricks for dentists by dentists. But then it was a little bit more, came together, marketers came in, were helping. And so then we just, I just call it the marketing group now. It is funny, isn't it? Well, when we started it, someone would come on and do a stupid advert. I'd come on and go, we lost another one. I don't know when you joined it, how far it went back. But I used to go on every day and go, we lost another one. We lost another one. And it became an ethos, really, that when they came on and they're doing these spam adverts. And someone's done one this morning. They've done this thing. And I'm like, oh, no. And sometimes I go, right, if I'm in a bad mood, I'll just delete it. If I'm in a naughty mood, I'll just leave it up because I know we've got a few musketeers, don't we? And one of the musketeers went on this morning and said, I don't have a clue what you're talking about. But it's funny seeing, you know, how, and why not, you know, why should we be bombarded with garbage? You know, and in the background, I have marketers going, that's out of order. Can you stop that? I'm like, just grow up. Don't put that crap out there. You know, we're not interested in that. We want to learn. Yes, we like freebies. But, you know, the dentists, the marketers who have been sensible on the group have done really, really well because they haven't done that. You know, they've been contacted in the back end and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I just think they've just got to be a little bit careful. But do you know what? I've got specific questions. When marketers join, I say, do not do spam. This is what spam is. They go, yeah, won't do spam, won't do that. And they go and put it on. And I think, right, I'm going to leave you to it. Serves you right. And then they get shot down by the dentist.
Yeah, it's really weird because, I mean, I've been, you know, within dentistry, obviously, for a while. But, you know, if they're marketers for dentists and they like groups or they like pages or this and that, surely they get targeted by the same stuff that we do. And the number of times that I see this, you know, I get direct messages, I get LinkedIn messages, I've got
Let's say, we've just come up with this new technique, or we're trialing this technique to increase your Invisalign or implant leads. So we'll do it for free. You just cover the ad spend. Yeah. So, and it's just like, fucking hell, I so often that I can't believe that it still goes on. Surely they see that other people are doing it.
It's mad, isn't it? But it gets, you know what, it's so entertaining. And, and you know what, my USP is to be informed and to have the choice. And that's so dull, but that's mine. In other words, I think everybody should be the same, whether you're black, gay, straight, transsexual, whatever you are, you deserve to have a choice in life. You have to be given information, and then you make a choice dependent on the information you've been given. And no matter what business I've done, it's the same. That's why it really irritates me when you get idiots on other dental sites that just start putting things out about transsexuals and stuff. They don't know the struggles that they're going through, and they think they just wave it away like it's a fly that's irritating them. And that is just, that goes to my core. And I think, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to do that, to be honest. I think, you know, but anyway, that's another thing. But so that's my, you know, unique selling point with regard to, don't know, where are we going with that? What did you ask me?
Just about, we were talking about all the marketing stuff and how, you know, did they not see other marketers doing the same thing? And you were saying, oh, your USP about choice and people get the information and then they're free to make the choice. And maybe you were going to be saying how, you know, the marketers and I don't know, go on, you
no, so my unique selling point is to be formed to have a choice. So I don't know, mate, when I went off on one, I can't remember.
Yeah, nobody, but it's true. I mean, I think it's you know, marketers, yeah, put yourself out there, create value. I think one thing that some people don't realize, and I think you may be a good illustration of this, is that there's this, I think, inbuilt assumption that, well, if I give all my stuff away for free, there's nothing left for me to sell. So it's like, you know, I'm gonna be quite vague and sort of maybe a little bit cryptic about this in the hope that people are that interested that they'll buy off me. But actually, what ends up happening, and I see this because I follow like loads of successful people, you know, the most successful, from what I can see, that have the most people following them, or the most sort of interest in the courses that they're doing, all of this stuff that shows true success, in my view, are the ones actually that the most sort of giving with time and knowledge, and they don't appear to. So, you know, I think this is the same, I suppose, with everything, isn't it? You know, if you give enough, then people come to you because they trust you. They know that they're going to be coming to somebody who knows what they're talking about. They feel as though, you know, you can help them.
Absolutely, they don't buy. They're not buying necessarily your knowledge. They're buying you, the person. They're buying how much. I mean, I couldn't, you know, no matter how many posts I put on the Facebook, I couldn't give all my information. I just couldn't. But yeah, I get you. The vagueness, the holding back. You think you're then, but that's rubbish. Exactly what you're saying. You just got to give it. You've got to either give yourself up to everybody or to use that as a selling tactic or not. I mean, I will tell anybody anything about running a business, how much you can earn, how much practice is worth. I have nothing hidden. Yeah, I'm not bothered. It's certainly not to flex, because I will give you the dark side as well as the bright side. Yes, my practice, I sold for millions, but, you know, I've had a very dark side getting to where I am in my life now. You know, the depression, the anxiety, the, you know, the loneliness. So I've had all those things. So I will balance it out, not just say, you know, all the fast cars and the wet beaver motorboats. Yeah, that's the funny part of life. But there are, you know, there are some, you know, very dark moments as well. You know, and I think that needs to be balanced.
Yeah, and the word balance is quite an apt thing to say. Do you feel as though you can't have your level of success, so you can't really? It's very difficult to go through, especially dental practice, but building a business without, you know, it can't all be amazing. You almost need to go into it and start the journey expecting the negative, expecting the impact it'll have on your sort of mindset, mental health, family, friends, because, you know, it's impossible not to have the balance and the opposite
of the success?
Absolutely. You know, your question is spot on, and you've answered it really, because you do have to have balance. There's balance everywhere in life, isn't there? Yeah. You know, and that balance of success has to be balanced with not necessarily torture, but balanced with, you know, a darkness, which, you know, there is. I don't know anybody who hasn't got that balance, you know, and I've certainly experienced both in my time. And would I want to upset that balance? You know, the bad times will just show you, you know, just wake up the good, you know, as Robin Williams used to say. You know, so, you know, there are good and bad in everything. It's just when the bad gets too much and too overwhelming, you know, and I've gone to therapy because they've got too overwhelming. I went to therapy every time I started a SWOT practice because I didn't know why I was doing it. And then I'd go, right, that's it. I'm fine for a while. Let's get back into this SWOT practice. Let's build it. You know, let's go again. You know, so I've had my career has been fascinating, but, you know, fortunately, but I've got a very supportive family now. You know, I don't think that now in my time that my wife thinks that another SWOT practice would be the way forward, because she sees the passion that I've got when I talk to you, Brad, or when I have when I talk to or take a course or you know, do things on the group. That's where my passion is now. So when you've got no passion, you've got that those dark sides. If you lose that passion, that dark side is out, you know, it will dominate. You're out the window, you're finished then.
And I think actually that's because I think we're running out of time a bit, but I think that's a really good place to start to just focus at the end is, and I think one of the benefits, and sorry if this sounds like I'm shining sunshine up your ass a bit here, Grant, but I think
mate, you go for it.
Yeah, I go for it, it's fine. Is actually, I think, because you've been there, done it a few times, you know, you've got the t-shirt, you've got another t-shirt, and you've got a wardrobe full of t-shirts of being there and done that. And you're open with the ups and the downs and the experiences that you've got. I think actually, I can't think of, and I'm trying to think now, I actually don't know anybody else who has a course or mentoring program like you that's kind of done it. I think there's such a unique, respectable thing about the fact that you're not telling somebody from a marketing course that you did and a textbook that you've read. You know, you're doing it from the experiences that you've gained. And I think people should understand the value of that.
Oh, bless you. That's really kind of you. I get emotional when people say, don't say too much. That's very kind of you.
Yeah, I think would you mind just before we go then, just where can people go for that? I know you said you're mentoring and one-to-one stuff's quite busy, but the courses that you've got coming up, and where can people, how do they find where they can get sort of book on and get more information about that?
Well, they can go on Facebook groups, obviously. The Facebook group's obviously a good one. They can contact me on Messenger, Facebook Messenger. They can email me, Grant Macri, MCARWE@gmail.com. I have www.dentalbusinessmentor.co.uk. So, you know, anyways, if they go into my website, they can then give me a call or text me, or, you know, I'll try and get back as quickly as I can if I'm in clinic. But, you know, or if it's just a chat, you know, I don't mind having a chat on Messenger, even if it's not about, you know, joining the course and stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you are very well, you sort of easy to talk to about, because I think with the way that you present information, it's almost like, because you're open and truthful, even if the truth in some respects can be a little bit hard to tell. I think there's a definite, I just want to kind of basically try and make sure that people who are struggling, or they've got questions, or they're not sure, and the kind of you know, people aren't sitting there mulling over too much. And I think mentoring now is so vital that they need, people do need to reach out, and I think
it can be a lonely world, can't it?
This rather ineffective monologue that I'm doing at the moment is just the way that my brain's thinking at the moment. And actually, the number of dentists that I've sort of spoke to who kind of start to think they want to do something, then change their mind. And they kind of, you know, speaking to a dentist who, you know, is sort of was thinking about doing a practice 10 years ago and changed their mind. And they've been kind of regretting it ever since. And they can't quite figure out what they want to do. And it's like, they need to speak to somebody like you, you know, air those thoughts, because even though I've done it, I've only done it once. You know, it's, you know, my experience was
once
very
is
specific.
Enough. Once yeah. is enough.
I know. Yeah. So it's yeah, I just want to thank you for your time and you know, the like I said, the second interview and the only one we've done a second interview of. And the second interview was actually totally different to the first one. You know, you've got so much going on that actually I don't think we touched on anything that was touched on in the first first episode. So yeah, I think, thank you for your time.
And you, fella. Nice to speak to you again.
Take care, Eddie.